We're talking about desire as motivation, so use it now as a motivation to learn. Desire to learn. And be in touch with that, and then we'll be able to talk about it easier. Let's also make it a discussion. And let's make it a real group discussion, which I'll be spurring, you know, with this. And you can use whatever I'm saying as a place to start from. By motivation, what do we mean? I mean the cause of movement. Motivation is that which is the cause of movement, that which causes movement. I'd like to give you an example that will serve as many, many, many examples in time to come for you. It's a nice little simple clean one though, so you can use it. And you'll find that it has all kinds of implications, ramifications, and understandings. A baby who begins to walk does not walk because they want to walk. Okay, a baby doesn't want to walk. He wants to get somewhere. The baby fixes his attention on a goal, on a place, and wants to go there. That's the wanting that's involved. If he's happy, he will walk if he's able. If he's unable to walk, he may crawl if he's able. In other words, he wants to get somewhere the easiest, perhaps, or the most efficient way he can. So he doesn't decide to walk. He's not aware of saying, gee, I think I will walk. That's a very sophisticated concept. We have no reason to believe that a baby's at all interested in. And, you know, you may pretty much motivate yourself the same way. If you're sitting where you're sitting and you want to go to the, say, to the toilet in there, I don't even know whether you toss it over in your mind whether you'll crawl in or hop in or anything. I think that maybe what you just let yourself know is that you want to be in there. And then everything takes over from that. Just by wanting it, and wanting to be there the easiest way, perhaps, or the most efficient way, perhaps, you'll just walk to be there. You'll do whatever in your power to do to get there. And very frequently, we think that achieving things lies in wanting the intermediate steps. There are going to be very few of us who are going to want to walk for no reason at all, who are just going to want to walk for the sake of walking. Which brings us into the whole concept of wanting as a motivation. The wanting of something is really the wanting of something else. All the wanting for anything is really the wanting for something else. Behind every want is a want for something else, and I want this for that other thing that I want, and I want that for something else that I want. All desires, I'm using the word wanting and desiring synonymously. There are other kinds, there are other ways of desiring besides wanting, you know, that's needing and fearing, but for what we're talking about wanting. All desires are to serve other desires. So ultimately, the chain ends at something we call happiness. Just like the series of fears that we investigate through the option method, you know, we're unhappy because we're unhappy, we fear this because we fear that because we fear. So things that are desired are connected the same way. The exact opposite of the option method investigation, when we investigate, why are you unhappy about this? Well, because I fear that. Why are you unhappy about that? Because I fear this. Just as that chain and series of events takes place and leads to a belief, so does desire, wanting, without fear, do the same thing. Nothing is wanted in and of itself and for itself. Everything is wanted for another thing that's wanted. And this process is what has earned the respectable title of rationality. This very process of wanting for something else that we want is called rationality. Okay, so now is that clear? Motivation is the cause of movement. Desiring, wanting a goal brings the intermediate steps into play because they're wanted for the goal. The baby doesn't want the walk. He wants to be somewhere. Therefore, it brings the walking into play. It can be said, and as he gets older, he may even articulate it as wanting to walk. But that isn't what he really wants. He wants to be somewhere. So you'll see that in terms of baby training, it would even be very applicable. No child will walk until he's able to walk. No child will be able to walk unless he's physically able to walk, and nor will he walk unless he has a reason to, a goal. It'd be very clear that a child who lives in a small area will not walk as quickly or as easily as a child who lives in a larger area. A child who can crawl to everything that he crawls to, as long as that is physically easier to do, will do so. When the child wants something and wants to get it more easily, more efficiently, and the legs are able to do it, it'll happen. We find that, for instance, we wouldn't think that crawling is an easier thing to do right now. Very few times would we prefer to crawl. Why? We really wouldn't even say it's easier, but yet somehow it's easier for a baby. We don't even need to know or make the decision. The body does. And it's been a pretty clear principle, too, in psychology. Physical maturation is a phenomenon whereby, you know, when you're able, then you will, and not until. Okay, so desire is motivation insofar as it's the cause of movement. And all desire is the desire for something else. And all desires for something else is the desire for something else beyond that. And it's all for something. Is that clear? Does it bring anything to mind? Is there anything you'd like to talk about?
Then the eventual desire is to be happy.
Okay. Can you trace that? As an example?
Well, you said the first want is really a want, not in and of itself, but a wanting of something else, and that want is a wanting of something else. So I just sort of felt like the end want would be just to be happy. Right. Not just, but to be happy.
And that would appear to be the cause of the whole chain, mm-hmm. Wanting. Would you like to pick can someone think of an example of anything that they might want, how they could trace it, just like they would trace a fear?
I want money.
And I want money because I want?
Not to have a regular job.
Because I want?
To do what I want.
That will, because I want?
So, freedom. I want to have the freedom to work when I want and not work when I don't want.
You're wanting all of that for some reason, and you want it in order to be free, and you want freedom because you believe that that can make you happy. Somehow, right? And I guess anywhere along the line we could say it would make us happy. I want money. So we normally would say, if I had money, it would make me happy. What do I want it for? Because I want to be free. Well, I believe freedom will make me happy. And you're right, it might all be mythological. Which is an implication. All wanting is wanting for something else. So I might want money in order to have material things. I want my material things in order to take care of my freedom, or I might to take care of my health, or to take care of, you know, whatever. And I want all of that so that I can can do this and do that, and I want that so that I can be happy. But maybe that last jump is magical. Maybe it's really mythical. Why do we want any of these things in order to be happy? Now, why do we believe that these things will give us the happiness? But nonetheless, that becomes what's called rationality. Wanting for a reason. And we have to make up the final reason is it'll make me happy. Which is sort of like self-defining. And if you notice that a lot of people are afraid to get in touch with why they want something, because they sense that somehow it is magical, there isn't really anything there. Now, well, why do you want that? Well, what do you mean, why do I want it? You know, you get the same kind of an answer, especially if it comes from fear. Now, if wanting isn't from fear, and if we're not using fear to motivate ourselves, but we're just using strictly desire, you will still run into the ultimate point where there's a belief involved. I believe that after I have all of these things, after I have health and wealth, power, or goods and material things and freedom, I will then be happy.
What about the corollary? Then if I don't get it, then I'll be unhappy.
That changes it into needing, right?
Yeah.
And that we're all very familiar with, yeah. That becomes the alternate way of motivating oneself, is needing.
Isn't that kind of... I wonder if that isn't necessary. Can you desire and come to that belief, well, I want this, so I'll be happy. And the corollary is, well, I don't have it, then I can't be happy.
That's not a real corollary. That's gratuitous. Doesn't have to follow that way. Could follow, and if I don't have it, I don't have it. And wouldn't it depend on where you're on now? If I don't have it, I'm where I'm at now. All right, where am I now? If I'm unhappy, if I don't have it, I'll be unhappy. If I'm happy, if I don't have it, I'll still be happy. So it'd begin on where you happen to be at the moment you started wanting. Money and love give you all of it. They become
money
the two symbols.
Love,
yeah.
Love.
Right.
In our culture.
Yeah.
And yet.
And that would all stem from the belief is that you can't be happy now. There's something lacking, something needed. Now, lacking in the sense of not needed, that I'd be unhappy without it, but I won't be more happy without it. Right? So now, unhappy people motivate themselves with the belief that I won't be happy, I'll be unhappy without it. Happy people tend to motivate themselves with the belief that I won't be more happy unless I have it. But it's a similar set of rules. It's an easier game to play because all right, I won't be more happy if I don't have that, but I could be more happy if I have that or that. And there are a lot more things, and there's a lot more of maybe it's the whole universe, maybe the whole world of things. And maybe, I guess, if you had the happy, you know, indomitably happy person, and you said, and he said, I can't be more happy unless I have that, and you say, you can't have it. Well, then this, you can't have it. Well, then this. He might spend the rest of his life saying, well, then this. And, you know, that'd be okay because it's still, you know, he wouldn't lose. He'd be so busy saying, well, then this, because there'd always be another this. And it's not too hard a game to play. And I suppose even when it came down to the end of it, okay, well, then the next breath. You know, and that'll make me more happy. And I guess that's not such a bad place to be either. And I guess with a happy person, none of it becomes a bad place to be ever. Even though he's believing, or she's believing, that they need it to be more happy, but they don't need it for their happiness. But they couldn't be more happy without it. That's okay. And if everything else goes away and you can't have absolutely anything, it would seem, you make up something. You know, like another moment. If I could have another moment, I'll be happier. And then you say, well, you can't have another moment. So then you say, well, then, and it's over.
Happy to the end.
So wanting a goal makes the intermediary steps take place. It actually creates them. If you all, let's say, want to go to New York tonight, after this, that wanting to go to New York will make all the intermediary steps take place, whatever those steps are going to be. That wanting it is going to make them take place. Now, people can do that out of needing, too. Needing not to stay in Montclair tonight can also make the intermediary steps take place. But wanting, or can prevent them from taking place also, right? We know how needing is self-defeating. But wanting to go to New York can make all the intermediary steps, insofar as they're within our power, insofar as they're within our ability, insofar as they are natural to the human being that we are in the universe, then the intermediary steps will take place. Whether it means taking a bus, asking for a ride, starting our car, making sure the car is in working condition, all the things, and there are countless numbers of phenomena and factors involved, all of which we've taken care of without much thought. Your gas tanks have gas in it. Your cars are in working order. You have spare tires. Like, all of those factors have already been taken into consideration. And you didn't even run through a checklist, probably. But you want something to be. You want it to happen, and all the intermediary steps will take place for you. You will make sure of them, insofar as you can make sure of them. And there's no reason why you won't, unless you're unhappy. If you're unhappy, you may have been neglecting your tires. If you're unhappy, you may not have filled your gas tank. If you're unhappy, you may not have taken care of yourself. You may not have arranged to ask somebody for a ride back, and they may be gone before you think of asking them. Things like that. But you would then really not be in touch with your goal. So then it follows that the more a thing is wanted, the more possible and the more easy is its eventuality. That what makes things happen, what makes us move, and what changes things in our world is wanting, above all. That the more we want, the more possible and the more easy is the eventuality. If we were always in touch with wanting, there would be no unhappiness. Unhappiness is something we do to remind ourselves that we want, to use it as a motivation. It's what we do when we've doubted that we may not remember our goal. It's the way that we remind ourselves.
And it can become pretty distracting from your goal.
Absolutely. It can make the goal impossible. Now, especially if the goal is happiness. And since the goal is happiness, unhappiness makes it absolutely impossible. But even if it's other things, and all the many other things that call for ease of body, that call for relaxedness, that call for lack of tension, all those things that we want that call for that are impossible. All the things that we want that call for clear thinking become impossible. Many do not let themselves want. For them, they must first ascertain if they're able to achieve it. They feel they have to make the ascertainment that it can be achieved. Now, the problem in this is not in wanting to estimate the probabilities of success. Happy people might want to do that too. But it's why they do it. It's when we're unhappy why we want to estimate our probability of success. See, the person who predicts out of the belief that they'll be unhappy if they did not achieve, then they'll be in a position of saying to themselves, well, if I can't get, I don't dare want. Because, see, I can't now decide whether I want it or not until I know whether I can get it. Now, many things can't be gotten unless you want them. and we're going to get into that, certainly personality states, certain psychic phenomena, can't even begin to be achieved unless they're wanted. And so if we go through that system, we have to be doomed before we even start. So the problem is not in wanting to estimate the probabilities of success. I want to repeat that. Both happy and unhappy people do that. But the unhappy person wants to estimate for a reason, which amounts to something like, if I don't get it, I'll be unhappy, and if I'm going to be unhappy, I better not even want it. Wanting leads to unhappiness, is their belief. Now, if they inculcate in themselves the belief that wanting can lead to unhappiness, how dare they want? They never will. If I want and then I can't get, I'm going to be unhappy. And if we hedge our wanting that way, let's say we don't go full scale and say, okay, I don't ever dare want anything again in my life, which some people will pretty much do. If we hedge it on the condition of getting, we won't even efficiently estimate whether we can get it or not. Because now we're thinking through fear, and out of if I don't get it, I'll be unhappy. Oh boy, I better really, you know, make sure I can get it before I can even let myself want it. And that becomes a big game, because you wouldn't even want to estimate unless you already decided that you wanted it somehow, on some level. You wouldn't try to figure out if it was okay to want it if you hadn't already been motivated to figure that out, whether it was okay to want it. And what would motivate that except wanting it? Or something that, for purposes of convenience, I'll call attraction, which is the early stage of wanting. If we don't freely want, we will not even begin anything. After a while, we'll get to see ourselves as people who do not want to get. If we don't want, we'll see ourselves as people who don't even want to get. That only leaves us with a sense of deprivation, a sense of stupidity, and a sense of paralysis. The antidote is obvious. If we are willing to want before we even know, in other words, by not fearing not getting, by not needing it, then we can increase our wanting, increase the probability of having it, increase the chances of success, increase our estimation abilities, increase our happiness. If we can want without even knowing whether we're going to get, we'll be happier. Unhappiness is only to help us to do that. Okay, so if we make our happiness contingent on not getting or getting, we won't even be allowed to want. We can't even begin wanting. If you can't want, you can't get. So now let's say you're dealing with a phenomena in your own body, a phenomena about yourself. Like, for instance, screwing a screw into a hole. That depends on a certain competence and skill of your own. If your fear is that if you don't do it, you'll be unhappy, right? Now, if the fear reflects on you, not now if I can't have a thing outside myself, but if I can't do it, I'll be unhappy. Can you then allow yourself to even want to do it? No, that has to destroy wanting. It has to increase the fear of not doing it. If screwing it depends on any kind of calmness in the hand, any kind of relaxedness at all, that won't be able to be possible. If you even increase that more in any way, you won't even be able to begin to pick up the screwdriver. You can so destroy wanting that you don't want to screw it. I just don't want to. And you could start off by wanting to and wind up by not wanting to, not doing it, not being able to move. Which now leads to see you as somebody who doesn't do what they want to do, and it's a very hopeless feeling. It leads to tremendous depression. Yes. I can't even want what I want, becomes our feeling. I'm afraid that I really don't want what I do want, and I see myself not doing what I want to do. And I guess all of us could write a list of things that we say we want to do and don't do. And if we look very closely, we'll see that this is the phenomena that's taking place behind it. Because we've already set it up that if we don't do it, we'll be unhappy, and that's why we won't do it. We can't even begin to do it. Now, if I'm a person who believes that if I can't move my arm, I'll be unhappy. If I really believe that and get into that, if I can't move my arm now, I'll be unhappy. I will not be able to move my arm. Because I can't even begin to want to move it. The fear that if I try to move it and then find that I can't, I'll be unhappy. I am now what you call functionally paralyzed. And you will in your practices meet many people who do this. They may not do it so obviously as to be crippled, but they may do it so obviously as to appear stupid. They may be people who block out, who feel stupid, who can't follow things, who don't remember. That's the exact same phenomena. All the things, all those mental processes need relaxation in order to be achieved. They need wanting for them to happen. So that, for instance, to learn something, as I started when I introduced this tonight, you'd have to want to learn. Now, if you began with the premise, you know, after wanting to learn, you began, I'll be unhappy if I don't learn, you've done it. That's it. Forget it. That's the end of it. You will not learn. To whatever degree you need to learn, to that degree you will never learn. The more you need to learn, the more you believe you need to learn, the more you fear, the less you'll ever learn. The most quote-unquote stupid people that you'll ever meet are the ones that really think thinking is tremendously important. Now, sometimes we might make the misguess of saying, oh, well, the reason they think thinking clearly is so important is because they're stupid. No, it's the other way around. They are stupid because they think thinking clearly is so important. And by so important, I mean something to be unhappy about if we don't achieve it. If it's really okay not to think clearly, we can let ourselves still know that we want to think clearly. And thinking is one of those processes that just by wanting it makes it so. If you do anything more or less than want it, it becomes impossible. If you began with the belief that it's possible for me not to think, that's it. That's not wanting it. Because if it's possible for me not to hear, not to understand, or not to think, if that's possible, then I could begin to be afraid of doing that. And that's how you can give you off on that. And you can't really then be in touch with wanting to do it because you're really into the fear of not doing it. Because the fear of not doing it becomes, you try to extinguish that fear. Now, how can you extinguish the fear of not thinking except by thinking or not thinking? Which is it? And you're faced with one of those two ways. The only way you can extinguish the fear of not thinking is by not thinking further. What can overcome that whole phenomena? What's lacking in it is the confidence that you can still want. Now, so let's take thinking. That even perchance that for some reason you couldn't think, it would, if you knew that it wasn't for lack of wanting to think, that would really be okay. That if the reason you couldn't think was because there was something chemical going on or electrical going on, or you know, that'd be okay. And if that were really true, you'd never be upset about it. People who really have brain dysfunction are not upset that they have brain dysfunction. You can only be upset about it when you think you're the cause of it, when you know you are, when you're doing it. So that if they could have the confidence, if a person had the confidence that, look, I may not think of some things, I may not understand what I'm about to hear, I may not comprehend it at all, but that won't be for my lack of wanting to. They can really be okay. Because the only reason that the fear is there is to increase their wanting. The only reason that the fear is there is to affirm to themselves that they really do want to learn. So if they could stick with, I really do want to understand. And there's no reason why I won't, as long as I keep wanting to. That's within my power, at least, right? There's no reason that I won't learn insofar as it's within my power, as long as I keep wanting to. They'll be all right if they could stay right there. And if it's not within their power, right, all the worrying in the world is not going to change that, and all the fearing in the world is not going to change that. So they could just say, look, I can allow myself to want to learn. And if I just stick with the wanting, it doesn't make any difference whether I learn or not, because that learning won't be dependent on me. The only learning that I'll ever learn is what I want to learn. You know, it'll only come from that. And there can be a real peace that comes about and a real learning. Now, there are many, many other phenomena that take place that are just like that. Anger, depression, jealousy. Most of the personality traits that we have that we make judgments on. If we fear our own personality traits, whatever they may be, we intensify them. The angriest person you've ever met is the person who hates anger most. Again, we may make the mistake of assuming, oh, the reason they hate anger so much is because they're so angry all the time. No, it's the other way around. The reason they're so angry all the time is because they hate anger so much. Because he needs to be not angry.
He needs to be not
And he just
angry.
Absolutely hates himself for being angry. Who is angrier except people who hate themselves, etc., you know, and hate their anger? And yet he believes that it might be possible, and it's possible for everybody else not to be so angry. How come I'm so angry? If he gets angry enough at himself and hates himself enough, maybe he won't be angry. But that's the cause of anger, is self-hate. The most angry person is most angry because they hate anger most. They're most judgmental about anger. We very frequently get into that, trying to root out what we call so-called personality defect. You know, we've got this tremendous system that points to certain kinds of behavior as being defects, or wrong, or bad. And they really don't do anything to anybody. But somehow we've gotten to believe that they're wrong because we hope to use that to stop us. Again, instead of wanting, using fear as the motivation. Now, when fear becomes the symptom, right? We get into a way of life where we keep using fear as the motivation to motivate ourselves. Now the thing we want to root out is fear and its symptoms. You know, we get all the symptoms from fear now. Headaches, stomach aches, anger, bad temper, bad smell, whatever. We get all of these things that are symptoms, expressions of our having lived with fear, having lived by fear. When we go to root them out, we use the same technique again. Fear of them. Anger at them, hatred of them, dislike or disapproval of those things, judgments upon them. So, for instance, as stupidity is from fear, then we try to root out stupidity with more fear, we only wind up being more stupid. Anger is from fear, we try to root out the anger with more anger, we wind up more angry with more fear. And each thing, as we apply, and it's very much like, you know, an immunization technique in medicine that doesn't work. You know, it's like in order to cure cancer, you get more of it. In order to cure tuberculosis, you get more of it. I'll show myself. That'll stop me. And so all of these things that have to do with your own personalities, no one of you will be more destined to fail than whichever one of you is the most into a self-improvement project. And any of you who have any idea of improving yourselves has got to be the one most destined to fail. Because that word improvement, by what I mean, is loaded with disapproval. Loaded with the concept of fear.
That's why diets don't work.
That's why diets don't work. Exactly. That's exactly why diets don't work. People on diets can't get into wanting. they're always interfering. And the cause of their eating is fear. And so they always want to console themselves. So they make themselves feel bad about going off the diet, then they go on a binge to console themselves. Now they feel so bad that they failed on the diet that day. Like say they were on a diet, they were losing weight. Now the one day they felt bad, and their symptom of feeling bad is to eat. That's the way they express their fear and their console themselves. So she'll have an extra piece of cake or a piece of pie or a sundae or whatever. Now she went and did that. Oh, shit. She did that out of unhappiness. And now she becomes unhappy that she did that because she's off her diet. She becomes so depressed. Forget the diet. The diet now only becomes an occasion for failure. The diet now only becomes another thing by which she can fail and feel bad. I'll go on it again next week. Start next Monday. And go on a binge again. See, until she fails again. Now, the person who can succeed on a diet is when they go off a diet said, I did that because I felt bad. I did that because I was unhappy. Stand up, brush themselves off, and go right back to their diet. They'll succeed. But a person who tries to counteract their so-called failing on a diet with more fear won't succeed. And so the average fat person that you have met will tell you that they've lost thousands of pounds in their life. It's like a on-again, off-again type of thing, because the motive in their way of using it has been the very same thing that's always caused their gaining weight, fear. Disapproval. So we can increase our wanting if we'll just be willing to want before we even know what the outcome is going to be. Then let's estimate it. Let's want it first. Then estimate it. Then see if it's possible. Then see if we want to go through all the trouble that it may take. Let's see if we then want the intermediate steps. But first let us get in touch with wanting. And in doing that we can clear all the middle ground. And we could properly evaluate it for ourselves. And we could really be in touch with what we might want more. And then our life can be, I want this, but I want that more. And there's no sense of deprivation. There's no sense of failure. There's no sense of never having been what you wanted to be. Want the ultimate step really very much. And you could, here's something I can do. This, if I want to do this, this time next year, what do I want to have? Okay. Now, I have an idea of what I want this time next year. What would I want to do in the next year, you know, to get that at the end? I have an idea. Well, what do I want to do in this next month in order to contribute to this next year, to my getting that the next year? What do I want to do in this coming month to make what I want in the next year come true?
I have no
then back up. That. What do I want to do this week to accomplish what I'm hoping to do this month, you know?
I only question the trying to decide, is it worth the trouble of anything beyond what do I want to do today? I just don't think you can decide whether it's going to be worth the trouble or not up front.
Oh, but you can do that if you get in touch with what you would want more. You can do it up front. You keep your eye on your goal. Then you look how to get... Then how to get to it, well, you won't even look. How to get to it will all start coming up. What will I need to do to get to that goal? And some of those things will be contradictions to other things that you want. So if I want to learn the piano by this time next year, what will I need to do to get to that? Now you could begin with, well, I don't know. Let's just try now to learn the piano. Fine. In a short while, you begin to see that you're not making too much progress unless you give it a little more time. And the question immediately comes up, do I want to spend more time practicing the piano or do I want to spend more time doing other things that I value? That sets up this kind of a process, which is lefts and rights, choosings, and all kinds of decision-making things come in of what do I want more? Well, again, that is going to be determined by another ultimate goal. And so again, you're not going to be able to make that decision unless you get in touch with an ultimate goal and compare them. And in each way, the ultimate goal that's the more important one, quote unquote, is the one that'll win, regardless of the intermediate steps that might be involved. And so, right, so I will have less time for this or that. That's okay, because what I wanted the time for that for, remember the chain of desires. Let's make this a real example. I want to learn the piano by next year, and in order to do that, I find now that I'll have to practice more. But by practicing more, I'm going to work less hours. I have to take some time off for work or find a job that takes less time or cut down on my social life or something like that. So let's just pick one of them. It means I've got everything the way I said. It means I'm just going to have to work less hours.
You were saying, I want to learn the piano, so, and then these things. And I'm saying, but you don't yet know what you want to learn the piano for.
Oh, I see. But that's going to come up. That's what I'm just about to find.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It will come up.
Yeah. Because what you'll say is, okay, once you start making the decision, what do I want to work for and what do I want to learn the piano for? Whatever's behind each of them have now come into conflict, have now become a question. And I haven't thought about it, really, why I wanted to work and why I wanted to play the piano. But now that it's going to be a trade-off, whatever it is that I want to play the piano for is now in conflict for whatever it is I want to work for. And I just compare the two of them, and the one that's more important to me or the one that I want more determines my choice. And I want to play the piano more because it'll make me more popular at parties and get me greater love. And I want to work more because it'll give me more money and enable me to throw nicer parties. Okay, now you still haven't done it, right? So you go to the next step. What makes a nicer party? Playing the piano or having more money? And whichever it is that you're finding more important is going to be your choice for you. We do the same thing with fear. When it comes to avoiding fears, we pick the thing we fear most to avoid most, and the thing we fear least, we'll get into it.
You're saying in therapy that could be really, it sounds like it would really be a useful process to start going on the, well, why do you want the track? I want to do my homework, but I find it boring. And to do what the unhappy route seems to not be very productive. I get just stuck.
Oh, really? No. If they throw in boring, Byron, you are have to be on the unhappy road. If it's a question of they just don't know which they want more, you're going to, what do you want? But once they throw in boring, you better find out what they mean by boring. And you'll find almost in every English-speaking person I've ever met who's used the word boring, what they mean by it is that there's something else I should be doing. There's a belief that there's something else I ought to be wanting to do.
The first step after boring is, well, I want to play basketball.
Okay, yes, but I should do my homework.
Yeah, I know I should do my homework, but I want some things.
I can say, honestly, 100% of the people I've ever asked what they meant by boring, they always meant they're not free to do anything. Nothing interests them. All the things that might otherwise make them happy and all the things they might otherwise enjoy, at the times when they're feeling bored, they cannot enjoy them. And when I ask them why, it's because there's something else they should be attending to and for some reason don't want to. For some reason don't want to get into this other thing, and they're sitting on that edge of nowhere. They can't let themselves enjoy anything. They can't let themselves do that because it's like giving themselves permission not to do the other thing that they should do. And that's the feeling of boredom. There's a real restless feeling and yet not doing anything about it. Because if you went and enjoyed something else, you'd be giving yourself permission and saying it's really okay that you didn't do the other thing. The other thing which you firmly believe you should be doing. And so you have to sit there and do nothing. At least that, if you don't do the thing you should be doing. If they're bored doing their homework, that might be something else than homework is boring. By that, they just simply mean I don't like homework. Not interesting, not engaging. It doesn't motivate me to want to do it. If they're having a problem with it, apparently they have a value for it or they wouldn't be bringing it up. They want to do the homework because
right.
They want to.
No, they want to be complaining.
They want to get the grades and they want the advantages of what doing homework does. So why would they say it's boring? Because they're believing there's maybe something else they should be doing. It's quite possible for a young person to believe that they should be socializing when they do homework.
Because that would be more important to them for their welfare or their well-being at that time.
Or it's expected of them. It all shoulds have to do with my own good somehow. I should be doing it for my own good, and I don't want to do what's for my own good becomes the feeling, and that's the feeling of boredom. I don't want to do what I've already judged to be good for me. So for instance, he may have judged homework to be really in his own best interest to do it, and yet I never want to do it. I always want to go out and play. I always want to do this, and I always want to do that. Homework really bores me. But yet he's beginning with the proposition that it is to my benefit if I do it, and I should want to do it. But see, he can't be in touch with wanting to do it because he's believing he should want to do it. forgot that he made the judgment that it was to his benefit. And that can be a real boring feeling. Everybody else is out at the basketball game and you're in your room doing your homework. You can feel very restless and very bored. Having the feeling you're not doing what you want to do. Boredom almost always has a feeling of anger in it. Always blaming the boring thing for the feeling.
Outside you,
yeah.
And having to do that.
Right.
Having to do it.
And there's a feeling of having to be there. And then, of course, bored people feel that the solution to boredom is to get away. Is to get away from it.
Change whatever.
To prove that they don't have to be there.
Well, they've decided that they never can find it unboring.
Right. That it's in the nature of the thing.
So in that sense, you would have to get away from it.
Sure, because there'll always be something else that they believe they should be doing. Instead of that, I shouldn't be having to do this, I shouldn't be doing this, I should be contributing to my benefit some elsewhere. You know? All right. In decision-making abilities, wanting, motivating, all of that comes into play. The whole purpose of wanting is motivation, as you said. That leads to a decision. The whole purpose of this is to make decisions what to do. We want to be happy, so we start this magical process of, well, okay, now I want to be happy, but that's not enough. I mean, I have to do something. So to make decisions on what I want, I set up a whole bunch of magical things that I'll be happy with, and now that gives me something to do. I can work toward them, toward health, toward wealth, toward power, toward whatever, you know, ease of movement, whatever. And it's the whole decision-making thing that's the myth, the whole idea of having to make decisions, that's the mythical thing. But since we live with that, there are ways of proceeding with it happily, not unhappily. And let's look at wanting on two levels, attraction and wanting and doing. So that there may be many things that we're attracted to. Think of attraction as a question. Attraction is just basically the question or the guess that I may be happy with that. That may make me happy. That may contribute to my happiness. So a number of things may attract us. Now we're faced with the problem, with the question, what do we want, though? There are a number of things that attracts us. It attracts us to sit still, and it attracts us to get up and move. Right now, it attracts me to continue talking to you, but it also attracts me to go out and have some coffee. That's no problem. That's just a question. But in order to make that decision, I can use fear, or I can not use fear. I can use desire. In order to use desire, I have to get in touch with, or will get in touch with, what do I want more? What do I want them for? It'll help me to know why I want them more. Both things are attractive. Both have consequences. And the choosing of one and the not choosing of the other has consequences. And they're parts of a package. They're parts of a path that are different paths and have different constituent parts to them as I go along. And they will lead to totally different, perhaps totally different, ends and conclusions. Now, if I decide to continue to talk to you, that is going to give me certain advantages or disadvantages in terms of other things. That's the package. If I decide not to continue to talk to you and go have some coffee, that's another package that has its prices and its rewards. So we're into a price-reward system for ourselves in order to make decisions. We can focus on the rewards or we could focus on the prices. Very frequently, through fear, we focus on the price. And all prices become too high. We can focus on rewards and be in touch with what do we want more. Now, sometimes things become attractive. And in order to guarantee that we do the thing that's most attractive, we will frequently say, I should do it. That's what I should do. And then sometimes other things that we think are better to ourselves, the other thing becomes more attractive for another reason. Now, for instance, there are things that we will want to do and decide then not to do other things that are attractive. And those other things may even become more and more attractive. And the attraction that increases for them It just means the question is getting louder. And if you think of increased attraction for something, try to hear it that way, that the question is getting louder. A decision isn't being made yet. And just because the question is loud, that doesn't mean that that's the best place to go. It doesn't mean that that's what we'll decide is the best place to go for us. And we could really be happy in not doing the thing that most attracts us. Why does the question get louder? Because there's more that we want to consider. Now, for example, it would really be attractive if all of us right now could be sitting on a beach in San Juan, or Hawaii, or something. No, today, in the woods of Canada. Nice cool breezes, etc. Okay? That could really be attractive to us. But we simply didn't decide to do that. We can't say we decided against it. We didn't decide to do it because we didn't want that whole package. And what it amounted to was that only part of the package was attractive. The goal is attractive, but what we would do to reach that goal may not be as attractive. The money it would cost, the time it would take, the things we wouldn't be doing in place of that may not all be attractive. And it can really be okay to find that attractive, knowing that it isn't really what I want. I can rest well with that. It's really attractive, very attractive, but it's only part of a package and I don't really want the whole package. And that's my freedom. Now, some people will torture themselves when they find something attractive and think what they've got to do to make sure now that I don't go running off to the woods of Canada. I've got to drive that thought out of my mind. I've got to keep it from being attractive. I've got to make it repulsive. I've got, you know, whatever. And that starts the whole obsessive compulsive phenomena taking place.
I watched that happen today. Somebody offered my daughter a car for $1. But she didn't have enough money to pay the insurance on the car, or the gas. And she tortured herself.
Because part of the package was attractive.
Sure.
But she didn't want the whole package.
Right. And she was in the process of torturing herself about, why did you have to tell me I could have it? You know, now I have all these decisions to make. But then she made the decision that she really couldn't keep.
Yes, by the time she was done, I bet you she felt very deprived of a car. That up to before it was even offered, she didn't feel deprived of. Yeah. Why?
Anyway.
Well, her fear was that she wasn't being good to herself somehow. Yeah. If she turned it down, she would really be denying herself.
I can see a fear that I wouldn't really do what I wanted to do. That I would be start not doing what I wanted to do. If I allowed myself to be attracted to something and then not do it.
For no good reason somehow, right? But you see, if you were really in touch that what you really wanted more was other things and you were really being nice to yourself by not taking that car, who could complain, you know? How could you feel bad? All right, I have the opportunity to have a car for nothing, for $1. Well, now, if I want the car, I would to go with it to protect myself, to keep me in touch with other things that I want. I would want the insurance and I'd want to keep it up, etc. What do I want more? Do I want more to spend my money on that, or do I want more to spend money on something else? And however I decide, I'm deciding that it's really for me and to my benefit what I've decided. It's what I wanted more. And I can rest real easy saying, oh no, no, I'd rather use my money not that way. I'd rather use my money another way. I can't feel deprived at all. I can feel like I've treated myself to working toward what I really want more.
The person who seems unable to decide anything, what's happening there?
They're forgetting that they're really deciding their own, whatever decision they make, is it really in their own best interest? Yeah, people do feel sometimes, you know, why am I given these choices? You know, why do I have to choose? Why can't I have everything? You know, that becomes, in the later stages of pain, you know, after using fear a lot, that's what you have to be left with. You know? Since you have such a sense of deprivation, you go into the question with a sense of deprivation, feeling that you're always being deprived. Yeah. And you need so much to have so many things that every time you can't have something, even if it's something you really don't want, you're still feeling deprived. You know? Not because you're not used to seeing and you're not into seeing, that's for your benefit. You know, and don't tell me it's for my benefit if I can't have this or that, but yet it really is. If I decide not to go that route, it's really I've decided somehow, on some basis, that it was better for me not to. But yet, after having done that, I could still believe, through the tricks that we play on ourselves, that it wasn't the best thing for myself. And the reverse of that, how many times do we do something that we really have decided we wanted to do with the total feeling that we don't want to be here, that we don't want to do it, that we have to do it somehow? And yet we only could have possibly done it because we decided we wanted to. We could only have possibly done it because we thought it was in our own best interest. And yet doing the thing with the feeling that we don't really want to do it.
This whole thing about discussion of people being self-defeating, it's really what they want to do. It's really not that they're doing it in order to defeat themselves. They're doing it in order to help themselves.
Exactly.